Thank you.
I was chatting with you. I didn't get my stuff ready. What's going on?
Good morning, everyone.
Good morning.
Welcome to the Board of Public Works. Last week, the comptroller and I proposed adding $4.4 billion more for K-12 education, including an additional $1 billion more in additional funds for school construction by putting state casino revenue into an education lockbox. This is something that should have been done years ago. Our administration is also pushing for more accountability in our local school systems. There have been repeated allegations of wrongdoing and potential corruption in places like Prince George's County, Baltimore County, Baltimore City, and Howard County, among others. And parents, students, and teachers are rightfully outraged that some of our children seem to be, they're being cheated out of the education that they deserve. Our administration has introduced the Accountability in Education Act of 2018. This legislation would create a state education investigator general. This new office would be charged with investigating complaints of mismanagement, misconduct, fraud, and corruption by state or local education officials or employees. I'm encouraged that representatives on both sides of the aisle in the legislature from some of these jurisdictions are in agreement with this and following through on these accountability measures. Prince George's County delegation introduced their own bill to create an investigator general to investigate the fraud and corruption in the Prince George's County school system. Baltimore City School Board instituted a policy just recently. I'm surprised they didn't have this policy before, but they had instituted a policy requiring employees to report wrongdoing and provided for whistleblower protections, which they didn't have before. Baltimore County Council recently asked state legislative auditors to investigate no-bid technology contracts in county schools. And I just happen to believe that no child in Maryland should ever have to suffer because of the failures of the responsible adult leaders. With that, I'll turn the floor over to my colleagues for any opening remarks. Madam Treasurer.
Thank you. It's good to be here. I'm certainly glad that to hear that, Governor, you're joining the legislature. The idea of the lockbox and keeping the education money for education, I think it'll be a good move for the people. Now, except to say again, it's a pleasure to be here. It's an early spring.
Beautiful
and
day.
I don't know what exactly that means, but we'll hope it's good.
I think we should have moved this outside today.
Well, I'm going to say that it's not too late.
You guys want to go out in the grass?
Are those chairs all attached to each other?
No. Wait, just grab your own chair. We'll go.
Thank you, Governor, and good morning, Madam Treasurer. As you know, Governor Hogan just mentioned the bill that he's putting forward to put a lock on the portion of the casino revenues that have long been promised for education funding. I was a strong opponent of the casino and slots referenda, the one in 2008 and the one in 2012, because, as I said then, and it is most certainly true today, the promise of increased education dollars from casino revenue was nothing but a fiscal fairy tale. I said not one bent dime of new spending for education will come to education in Maryland that wouldn't have come had casinos never put their predatory feet into Maryland. And 10 long years later, finally, we're going to correct this situation. I was a vehement and unapologetic opponent of the referendum. The voters spoke clearly, so and they did so based on the promise that gambling money would go to school systems to ensure that our students had the best teachers, best technology, and the healthiest, safest, and most modern classrooms available. It was a con job. So it comes as no surprise to me that this promise was never fulfilled, and our children have suffered because of it. Over $2 billion in the last 10 years should have been put into education, wasn't, because of this bait-and-switch operation. There's absolutely no question that something must be done. The fact that our children are subjected to structurally unsound buildings each and every day, that thousands of kids sit in freezing classrooms in the winter and sweltering classrooms in the summer, in schools that have mold, infestations, unsafe drinking water. I'm talking specifically here about Delaney High School and Lansdowne High School in Baltimore County. This legislation will provide the much-needed and long-overdue funds to support these critical capital improvement projects. Every child in Maryland deserves to attend a school that is modern, safe, and most of all, healthy. And I think any unbiased observer, and even if you're strongly biased and prejudiced, you walk through Delaney High School and Lansdowne High School, and you would say, I don't see anything like this except if I visit one of the poorest third world countries in the entire globe. Delaney, I guess, got a announcement recently, and I'm delighted in that. Lansdowne is next. Just because they have a zip code and a group of parents that are not particularly knowledgeable or powerful about how Baltimore County operates, but they deserve a new high school in Lansdowne. That's why I completely support Governor Hogan's proposed legislation, which will dedicate 20% of the annual casino proceeds that are now going to go as a supplement, not as a substitute, for existing education dollars. 20% of those new dollars will go to PAYGO capital funding for public school construction. I'm extremely pleased this legislation has bipartisan support because there's nothing more important than the health, safety, and education of our children. I'm grateful to Governor Hogan for stepping up to honor the decade-old promise of slots for tots. Students, teachers, and families have waited long enough for state government to finally deliver on its promise. It's my sincere hope that the legislature can pass this bill in 2018 and send it to the governor's desk. Thank you, Governor.
Thank you very much. With that, I believe we'll start with Secretary McDonald with the Secretary's report.
Good morning, Governor.
Good morning.
We have 13 items on the Secretary's agenda, 4 reports of emergency procurement, and we're ready for your questions.
Any questions on the Secretary's agenda?
Governor, if I could, I would like to take a minute to discuss an incident that frankly doesn't have a specific item. But it occurred earlier this month at the construction site for the Four Seasons development on Kent Island. Following substantial rainfall, a massive stormwater runoff occurred, resulting in environmentally hazardous sediment plumes entering the Chester River. While I remain convinced that it was an error for the Board of Public Works to grant a license to allow this textbook example of sprawl development in the first place, today, I'm most concerned about the welfare of this ecologically sensitive area. Governor, I understand that your administration has had a rapid response from MDE and the Secretary, who I have a lot of respect for, I think may be here. I know it's been a rapid response to assess the damage and its root causes, and I don't know whether you would permit Secretary Grumbles to give us an update on what has been learned.
Thank you, Mr. Conker. I love this. Secretary Grumbles is here with us this morning, and if you don't mind, Mr. Secretary, we'd love to get an update. I know that you have been on top of this issue, and I'd love to hear some of the details about it.
Thank you, Governor. Thank you, Treasurer. Thank you, Comptroller. I am Ben Grumbles, Secretary of the Environment for Maryland. So as you noted, the bad news is that this significant sediment pollution event occurred, and it's unacceptable. The good news, if we can characterize it as that, is the situation on site is stabilized and the Department of the Environment is fully engaged. We are working with the Soil Conservation District and the county and the developer to follow up on several fronts. One of those fronts is that the Department of the Environment is assessing the sequencing of the permitting and the implementation of the erosion and sediment control plans. We think there was some fault in that sequencing. It could be improved. The other, the key one, is the materials that were used for the riser, the pipe connection, was clearly insufficient, and particularly given the 10-year storm. The other item that we're focused on is enforcement. We feel that the use of penalties and strong enforcement actions send a powerful signal, and we're committed to following through on that and coordinating with local government as well to try to ensure that this doesn't happen again. We're also committed to looking at broader issues associated with storm events, increasing precipitation, extreme weather, to factor those into our regulatory measures, controls. And the other point is that we are fully committed to keeping the board informed as our monitoring and enforcement actions proceed.
Thank you, Mr. Secretary.
Thank you for that. And I'll just remind the board that the attorney for Hovnanian, the developer, who had a long history of violations of environmental regulations preceding this, unbelievably inappropriate sprawl development right on the edge of the river next to the Chesapeake Bay. He famously stood where you did, Mr. Secretary, and said, "Scout's honor, we're going to be the best of the best. We're going to be all over the environmental protection of this, and this." So I really appreciate your quick response. I would urge you to keep all your options on the table when deciding an appropriate response to any violations that are uncovered, including bringing the license back before the board. I mean, I'm not talking about halting the entire exercise, but you know, they promised us that this would not happen. Scout's honor. So please,
we'll keep
you
informed.
I don't want to be an obstructionist, but I also don't want to let this just go by like, "Oh well, we're going to put a bigger pipe in." I mean,
agreed.
I think we can assure you that the secretary and his team is going to be as aggressive as possible, and will report back to us.
Yes, sir.
Thank you, sir.
Well, hats off to the secretary then, in advance.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Any other questions? Thanks. Any other questions on the secretary's agenda?
Yes. Is this item 12, please?
St. Mary's College? Mr. Chip Jackson is here from St. Mary's College. I think he has an exciting project for the new academic building and auditorium.
Good morning.
Good morning, Governor, Comptroller, Madam Treasurer. I'm Chip Jackson. I'm the Vice President for Business and Finance at St. Mary's College.
Great. And my question, thank you for being here. Why is this project so complex that we need to have an added layer of cost that I assume the taxpayers are going to pick up through this construction management at risk contract? This is an academic building, I understand.
Yes, sir. Thank you, Mr. Comptroller. It's a great question. One of the questions that we dealt with in the evaluation of proposals, the project includes a 700-seat auditorium, which is a modern, complex facility. It has both significant engineering issues, lighting issues, sound issues, acoustical issues, and developing through the CM construction management process, having the construction manager with us, can really help us understand the technicalities of that work and understand the costs of that work during the design process. The proposed number one firm, Holder, has great experience in exactly that type of work in a way that we believe provides great value to the development of this project. Their team and their firm have people who've built projects just like this. And when we looked hard at their work plan, about how they would approach the pre-construction phase, the design phase of the construction management project, they really showed us they understood the amount of detail and effort that they were going to provide to help us make sure that we developed this project technically and on budget in a way that the other firms didn't have that depth of knowledge. So we struggled very much in this best value selection process about, is that price best value for the state to develop this project? And we believed it was.
Right. No, I respectfully disagree. I think you're just going to end up paying this Virginia company, Holder, not that I have anything against Virginia companies. I see Whiting Turner was second, and they're just, you know, just as bad at this, because here we're being asked to approve $375,000 for a pre-construction fee. My understanding is that the overall amount will be in the $6 to $7 million range to this company for doing nothing other than, as you say, stepping between you and the construction. In other words, why didn't you just do a design bid build like we do most of our state buildings? Why do you add this extra layer of $6 million for doing no construction on top of it and using their own, I assume, Virginia subcontractors? That's what we're going to end up bringing in here, because all of these guys have their own team players. And yeah, you guys sit back, I guess, and have somebody that you can talk to. But under this model, I think there's a lot of, particularly for a building that's not a physics lab or some kind of jet propulsion, complex building. So I understand what you're saying. I just happen to disagree with you.
Well, I'd be happy to follow up with you on some of the specifics of those concerns. For the question about subcontractors, our process...
The total cost for this building is what?
$48 million.
Okay. I guarantee you that there are contractors in Maryland that would build that for $38 million. And it would be just as beautiful as the structure you get and just as precise, but it would be done under design, bid, build. And someday I'm going to be able to achieve the truth on that. And, this is a system that is way out of whack and with the university system. I'm sorry that your project drew my attention. It's a generic one.
Yes.
But I'm just sorry to see the added expense for the taxpayers.
Thank you.
I'm going to vote
no. You were about to say something when you were interrupted. I'm curious what you were going to say.
So in our process with construction management at risk, and I understand there's discussions about the value of that versus design bid build, and I have a lot of experience doing both myself at St. Mary's. When we go to construction, the construction manager does some work. They provide overhead. They provide general conditions work. But the bulk of the work, the hiring of the masons and the site contractors and the electricians, the painters, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera, those are all competitively bid, open book. We, as the owner, see all that competition. And in our experience, that competition is primarily local. It is not from Virginia, or it is maximizing competition locally. That's our goal. That's our expectation. And the process allows for us to be involved with the construction manager in that bidding process of those trades. So we tend to think we're trying to protect the interests that way, but I understand the comptroller's questions as well.
Thank you very much.
Yeah, you mentioned they may not be coming from Virginia. Right, they may not be coming from Virginia, but they're still their contractors that they have enormously close and cozy relationships with.
And later on today, University of Maryland College Park, new resident hall and dining facility, we're going to give another $20 million contract to Holder Construction. So, yeah, they have their contractors, trust me. And it's all one big mysterious pool. And I don't mean to intimate that there's anything illegal. I'm just saying that it's an added cost. It's unnecessary to the taxpayers. And I wish that you guys would not utilize it. But I'm just the comptroller.
Mr. Comptroller, I really do appreciate those comments. I can say at St. Mary's College, we've done other construction management at risk, and we work very hard with open book pricing to promote competition, and so there are no cozy relationships. That is fundamental in our process, and so we try to achieve.
Yeah, but what you're missing is that they tell their contractors, bid X amount, because we've got another job where you can make Y amount. Do you understand that?
That may be. I can't answer that question.
Thank you.
Any other questions on the Secretary's agenda?
I'd like that item pulled out, if I could.
Pull that out for a separate vote. Well, that's item 5?
Item 12.
Item 12. So I'd like to make a motion to approve item 12.
Second.
Comptroller votes no.
Okay.
2-1. Now, is there a motion on the remainder of the agenda?
Move approval.
I do have one question on item number 3. The wetlands license.
Yes, okay. The wetlands administrator is here. This is a request for a non-water dependent project on a platform. It should be a little expansion of a restaurant onto the scene.
Good morning.
As I understand it, this is to give a non-wetlands license to a restaurant that wants to expand over the water. And there was a hearing, and a lot of people came out with concerns. And then, I'm not sure what happened, and then a request was put out for concerns in writing, and there weren't any. Presumably because people felt they had gone to the hearing and nothing had happened, so why would they be writing? And it turns out that most of their concerns deal with the impact on the water and on the neighborhood of the use of the expanded deck. Is that right so far?
I believe most of the concerns actually were about trash, oil, and chemicals entering the water and the marina boats. And also the concerns were about tree clearing in the parking lot.
Yes.
That's
what I'm saying. So it was the use of the docks, not.
Or it was the perhaps use of the area surrounding the dock. So I think that MDE's perspective, and I had to agree with them, was that these concerns were just outside the purview of the wetlands license or our wetlands regulations.
And I get that. I mean, so my question is, but that's still serious concern for the neighborhood, for the community, for the people.
Are some of these
where
things
were
that
they
should
supposed,
be yeah. addressed at the county level?
Yeah, where were they supposed to go to get this addressed?
I don't know if, you know, the tree clearing activity would clearly be addressed through critical area.
Doesn't he get a license from somebody?
Yeah. I think what they're saying is this had nothing to do with the MDE permit, but there are issues that they should be able to address in other places.
That's correct. Good morning, Mr. Governor, Mr. Comptroller, Madam Treasurer. I'm Andy May, Tidal Wetlands Division Chief for MDE. And just to build on what Bill was sharing, yes, we did hold a public hearing. It was quite well attended by a number of local residents who were, they had absolutely understandable concerns. A lot of it, frankly, seemed to be geared towards the operation of the Chesapeake Inn itself, who was the proprietor of that site. The actual project that we're here to approve today was just that 1,000-square-foot expansion of the already existing, you know, waterfront dining establishment. It would be a non-water-dependent activity, you know, under Florida statute or Maryland statute. But most of the substance of the complaints dealt with, as Bill mentioned, clearing and grading activities, you know, on land behind on the other side of the street, alleged expansion of the parking lot, you know, some other things. There were operational concerns about any time you have people dining near the water, you know, is it going to lead to excessive
and more people trip? Coming in because
yes,
of this? So
absolutely.
Where?
So to answer that part of your
yeah.
question, those things were all at the local level of jurisdiction over, and they were in compliance. We followed up multiple times with them on those issues. There were not violations that, you know, this is what we had been informed by both the county as well as the town of Chesapeake City, that essentially, you know, despite the allegations and the concerns, they did not believe that they were out of compliance with any requirements relating to the parking lot or the grading and clearing that occurred.
So it's the city?
It's predominantly
I'm just trying
the
to
county.
Where people are
it's
to
my
go.
Understanding that it's predominantly the county that would have authority over those two issues. We can get back to you on that and confirm.
When people call, you like to send them to the right people who can do something.
Absolutely.
Apparently you people can't do anything about it. I get that.
Yeah. But, and we did try and make efforts to bridge that divide. And
can I ask a question?
Oh, maybe we can have MD reach out to the county and ask them to communicate with the folks on their concerns, because obviously we don't have anything to do with zoning and planning and permitting mm-hmm. issues over there except for the state MDE
and
wetlands issue. So, but somebody ought to be addressing the concerns of the neighbors.
If I can add to, yeah. I believe the city manager had also multiple times tried to reach out to those same okay. people and bridge that same gap with the county
great.
And some of the concerned people. But I understand if you're living next to it,
yeah.
it may not make it happen.
Is there any, aren't any of those folks here today or Cecil County? Or?
Mm-hmm.
So I appreciate the treasurer bringing it up and the governor's concern about sending it to the right people, but it's pretty easy to understand why they would have appeared before you, because a bad situation, according to them, is not going to be, well, let's put it nicely, it's going to be problems are going to be increased by your permit. So in the public's mind, it's a little hard to say, well, we don't really have any jurisdiction over you. We're just going to make your life much more miserable by approving this expansion. And having said that, I'm not clear what, if anything, we could do, but I appreciate the governor saying maybe somebody could do something to urge the jurisdiction to put in new restrictions. Who likes to hear loud music at night? Nobody.
And we'd be happy to follow up in any way that we can. And if you would like us to reach out again to the county,
that'd be great. Thank you. So it's 1,000 square foot the deck, and the city and the county support it and approved it, and you reviewed your particular part of it. But you know, let's just communicate to the folks that aren't happy about it.
And if I can make one point to even enable, with our understanding of 16104 and the environment article, the prohibition on non-water dependent activities, to get over that. Requires to even be able to build up to that 1,000 square foot requires a local municipality or local power to actually adopt an ordinance to even allow that. So there was actually Chesapeake City did actually go through a process and amend their ordinance to even allow this to occur. So
great, and they had public input and public hearings when they went through their process, I'm sure. All right,
thank you.
Any other questions on the secretary's agenda?
I have one question. You can get back, I think. On 7, the DHCD project, the ECDC Enterprise.
Correct.
It wasn't clear to me how much they were getting as opposed to handing out in micro loans.
Is
it
manageable here?
We don't
need
we can just find out. Yeah.
I thought it was interesting.
Yes.
Thank you.
Is there a motion on the secretary's agenda?
Move approval.
Second. 3-0 on the balance. Now we're going to move on to the DNR real property agenda. Secretary Belton.
Good morning, Governor. Mr.
Good morning.
Governor, Madam Treasurer. It is a beautiful day. Thank you for pointing that out, Madam Treasurer. We take responsibility for that at the Department of Natural Resources. We have, for the record, my name is Mark Belton, the Secretary of the Maryland Department of Natural Resources. We have 7 items on our real property agenda for your approval this morning.
So, Mr. Secretary, I'd like to start with item 4, because we've got some folks that came all the way up from Crisfield to talk. We've got Rick Pollitt, the city manager, and Dean Bosman, the code enforcement officer, come talk about item number four. Thank you for joining us.
Thank you, Governor. Governor Hogan, Comptroller Francho, and Treasurer Kopp. I'm afraid I'm by myself today. Mr. Bosman was not able to make it. But I did not come alone. I have a styrofoam cooler with three fresh Smith Island cakes there.
Oh, wow.
I represent Mayor Kim Lawson, who has a tradition of trying to come to Annapolis when Crisfield is on the agenda. And mainly, just look at me as a great big thank you note. The mayor couldn't get away from his job today, but he did want to have me come and just express thanks to DNR, especially Carrie Losky. She has done just a fantastic job getting us through the point where we're now ready to go forward with a really nice kayak launch in Crisfield. It's going to be a terrific complement to our park. It'll be very close to our wind turbine, so we can bring that into the whole natural setting of the Crisfield Park and what we're trying to do with green energy, and also provide the kayaks for the folks who love to come to James Island and to Crisfield in general. So we certainly want to thank you, thank DNR, and thank you all for your consideration. And I want to thank Mr. Perry, too, of your staff, who met me downstairs and brought these cakes up here. That would have been a goal.
This is not a cake for the board.
You know what? You know, we haven't actually seen these cakes. Are you sure he brought them?
They're in there when I left it.
I always like that fourth for the board record. No, thank you very much.
Thank you very much, and thank you for giving a shout-out to the staff at DNR. I think they do a wonderful job as well. And maybe you get down there a little early for TAWS and try out the kayak ramp.
Yeah. Absolutely. And if we have any luck next door with the General Assembly, we'll put you in another golf cart ride.
That sounds good. Well, thank you so much. Any questions, Mr. Pollitt? Thank you for joining us.
Thank you all very much. Have a wonderful day.
Thank you. Any other questions on any of the items in the DNR agenda?
Move approval.
Second. Very good. Thank you. We're going to go on to DBM.
Good morning, Governor.
Terry Brinkley.
Governor, Madam Treasurer, Mr. Comptroller. For the record, David Brinkley, the Secretary of the Department of Budget and Management. We've brought six items for your consideration. Items 5S and 6S are supplemental, and I have people here to address any concerns or questions you may have.
Thank you, Mr. Secretary. I know there are a couple of people signed up to speak on a couple of items here. First, we have Douglas Trotter, I believe, who is here to speak about item one, the MTA call-a-ride contract. Is Mr. Trotter here with us?
I believe he is.
He is
here. And Deputy Secretary Jim Porter.
I think we'll hear from Mr. Trotter first, and then we'll ask the MTA to follow up and respond. Good morning.
Good morning,
Governor.
I'm Douglas Trotter. I'm the CEO and president of Secure Exchange Solutions. I've been a Maryland resident my entire life, except for a couple voyages to Texas. I'm an independent. And I was asked to be a subcontractor on this bid for the MTA, the call-a-ride program. My background, let's just go establishing credentials. I was a naval officer in the intelligence community. I was employed by NSA for 15 years. I was a senior executive at the agency. And my last job is I ran codes and ciphers for the United States of America and worked directly for the president. I did all the nuclear stuff, so I know security. The most valuable security in the world are nuclear defenses. At the same time, I managed over $3 billion worth of procurements. I left the agency, went to think tanks, went to be a partner at Booz Allen and Hamilton. Left with Booz Allen, I worked in commercial and federal work. I did the CSX project and took CSX out of Maryland to Jacksonville. It's not always a proud thing I did. I became the CTO as Chief Technical Officer for EDS in Plano, Texas. Headed up the General Motors account, about a $4.6 billion account. And I ran about $2 billion worth of procurements there. and I retired. And then I started ventures, and I had four venture firms in Maryland that had all been successful in growing. This is my last one. I say that all the time. Also have co-founded the Information Security Institute at Johns Hopkins University. I was a member of the School of Engineering at Hopkins, a board, Whiting School. I'm a Smithsonian laureate, whatever that means. It means I have a time capsule someplace in my work. I have 5 patents and 2 patents under evaluation, you know, all in security. And I was asked to look at this based on the last Board of Public Works a year and a half ago. And somebody came to me and said, can you modernize this system? And I said, you know, let's take a look at it. And I went back and I researched ever since the beginning of the program, which is 2005. When a company was given a contract to do the specifications for the system. Now, remember, in 2005, technology was totally different than today. And that company, which I believe, I will leave my notes with you, was given the opportunity to bid on the implementation of the specs, which, according to Maryland law, is against it. People really want to look at Maryland law. A person that develops specifications and bids on a contract is in direct violation of finance laws. But at the same time, MTA says in their opening bid, when you ask them about integrity, they say, we follow COMAR and we follow the FARs, the Federal Acquisition Regulations. There's a problem there, okay? Federal Acquisition Regulations, subsection 9.5, prohibits that totally. And when I was at Booz Allen, I used to do CETA work for the government, communications and security systems. And that means we can never bid on the job that we manage. Never. Okay, have no conflicts or interest are unbelievable. So that was one point. Okay. The second point is that ever since 2005-2006, the Maryland state government has spent about, let's see, I have it here, over $57 million on this program. Okay? But until July 1, 2017, all the work done under this program was illegal. And no one said anything. I just couldn't believe it. They had to pass a law in 2017 allowing taxicabs to use the system. And I said, why hasn't this been corrected by the legislature? I don't know. But who benefits from taxicabs? Well, the Public Service Commission said taxicabs can get 11.5% raise on the fee that they charge the state. And at the same time, the taxi company takes 9.5% the fee from the driver. So without doing anything, a taxicab gets 20% raise on Maryland state money. It's an amazing fact. And no one corrected it. Then we bid. I took a look at it, and I said, technology's evolved in such a way that can change the entire complexion of the system. So we went out and reviewed commercially off-the-shelf software. We managed that together in two parts. One is security part, because one of the major thrusts of the RFP was we need innovation and we need security. Okay? And I can show you an example of security that you use.
Mr. Trotter?
What?
I hate to interrupt, but we're going to have to, in the interest of time, because we have a lot of
okay,
folks here
on
many different items, if you could just tell us why you're here.
Okay,
and
we
what
were
it
just
is that you want to talk about item one, the MTA call a ride contract, because we really
fine.
Can't hear the rest of the history. I'm sorry, I didn't want to cut you off, so I want to get you to wrap it up.
Okay, I'll wrap it up. The call-a-ride contract was run totally out of the ordinary. There's no documentation given to the suppliers, nothing, no questions ever asked, nothing, okay, in a total blank. Then we get a call that we're disqualified after 6 months, 8 months, okay, no questions were ever asked of our corporation. And I've written you a letter, okay, on all the qualifications. The reason why we were disqualified is they did not want to open up our cost proposal. And the cost proposal is very simple, okay? What you have before you is you have a contract of $48 million or something like that. Total contract of $89,900,000. Okay? We bid $23 million. Now tell me how in the heck, if we're not totally technically disqualified, for some reason there's that big of a gap. Okay? And you spent already $70 million on this job, and you're going to spend another $98 million? And the only reason the MTA did not put the 6-year on that, it would raise it over $100 million. Now, is there any fraud in the system? 10%. There's 10% fraud in this system, if there's a penny. And no one addresses it ever. So I guess that's my complaint. I'm a taxpayer. I don't like to see $65,558,640 wasted.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Trotter. I think we're going to have maybe MTA address that concern. I don't know who wants to
talk. So, well, Governor, I'll take a shot at this.
Deputy Secretary Ports.
Thank you. So just to address the last comment by Mr. Trotter, the reason that we did not open the bid is it is a competitive seal bid. And we're prohibited from opening those bids when they are non-responsive. And Mr. Trotter is the subcontractor. The contractor that we were dealing with that submitted the bid was the ones that were deemed non-responsive. And just a few other things. The 2017 legislation that he points to, there was a gray area in the law, according to the PSC. Taxi cabs are used throughout the United States for mobility. There's no question about it. I ran transit in Harford County. I used them in Harford County. And it was always thought to be part of approved law. But apparently there was a gray area. And there was a technical change to make sure that it was clear. The original contract, look, in 2005, I was deputy secretary back then, too, to be honest with you, when we started this program. And
seems like you would have moved up by now.
Yeah.
I think it was that.
Oh, number two then, number two now. Maybe I'll be good enough to be number one, but I doubt it right now. But we got a good number one right now, so. thanks for pointing that out, though, Governor.
second term, eh?
But if I'm not mistaken, and my memory may be a little off on this, I'm not sure, but I believe it was KFH that helped us try to develop the competition between the mobility providers at the time, as well as the caller ride. And again, if I'm not mistaken, because it's going back a few years, but we had started the program and we allowed it to function for 6 months because it was a brand new program that had never been done in the state. It was creative to help people, disabled people and elderly folks, get around easily and for less money than our regular mobility providers. It also gave them extra access because it was easier to get a taxi cab than it was to schedule a shared ride through mobility. So it's a very creative program. So we waited about 6 months or so. I'd have to check with procurement on that, but 6 months or so to see how it worked out. And then we created RFP. If there was anything that was done inappropriately at that time, we would have had a protest at that time. And we've had several modifications to this contract since 2005, not just in the previous administration I worked in, but in the previous administration to this one. And there's been no alleged accusations as far as not answered things. And just to clear up one other thing that Mr. Trotter said, he mentions that we did not answer questions. We answered 26 questions that were submitted by Mr. Trotter. And we did that on email and marketplace because once we receive a question from any potential bidder, we have to let all the bidders know the same information. And we did that. And we also answered, and we published those responses, by the way, in February 23rd of 2017 and May 5th of 17. And we also, a total of 73 questions and answers were published, and including those, as I mentioned, from Mr. Trotter. And we also answered questions from a submittal of a PIA request. So I think we've gone up and above on that. We've also answered questions through email. And the bottom line is when we went to contact the prime in this case, the prime could not be located for several weeks. FedEx, as a matter of fact, basically told us the business was closed or nobody was there. And so we didn't have a whole lot of wiggle room. We deemed them non-responsive.
Okay.
And I don't know what else we can do at that point.
Thank you, Mr. Ports. Any other questions on EBM? I think we have a couple of – we have a speaker. We have Nancy Pinellas from Disability Rights Maryland that is signed up to speak on items 5 and 6.
I just note Nancy. For the record that, Governor, 2.5 years ago, you and the treasurer and I voted against a single bid contract because we wanted – competitive bids, and I'm happy to see that despite the disqualification of Mr. Trotter's group, there were two bids, and that's not easy, and I want to obviously recognize my colleagues, and we're good, but we're not that good to determine every nuance of the contract, but as long as there's competition, that's a big step forward. So thank you for implementing that. I know the winner apparently had an emergency contract to allow you to get this other through, and Mr. Trotter's group really can't appeal because, as you say, the prime is the only person that can go to the Board of Contract Appeals.
Thank you.
Thank you, Governor.
Mr. Can I just clarify one thing about the actual contractor, not the subcontractor, the contractor that was disqualified.
I'm sorry, I couldn't.
The contractor was disqualified.
Prime contract.
Correct. The prime was not responsive.
The prime
correct.
Was not responsive. And where is that now? They protested, you responded.
No, they did not
protest. We tried to contact them. As a matter of fact, the prime had mentioned to us that they did not want us to speak about this contract.
They didn't share their desire.
Yeah.
Well, I'll share offline.
Thank you. Okay, do we have Nancy Pinellas from Disability Rights
Maryland?
I believe
Ms. Pinellas is not here. We called
not
her
here?
Outside.
Okay, any other questions on the DBM agenda?
Yeah, no.
I have a question.
Actually, I was asking my two colleagues here, but go ahead and let you have a question.
I'm associated with Mr. Trotter. My question would be,
well, you need to, if he's going to allow you to speak, you need to be at the podium and introduce yourself.
Come up.
We need you to come to the podium.
We need
you to
come to the podium.
And we need your name. There's a court reporter that needs to be hooked okay. into you at the microphone.
Okay, thank you. I'm sorry, my name is Barry Heyman. I've worked with Mr. Trotter on this contract, and I don't think he expressed what is really the problem here. This was the bid that MJM, the present and current and only contractor for this Colloride contract for the last 10 years, and if you approve it for another 5 years or whatever, is for close to $90 million. Mr. Trotter's bid is for around $25 million. Now,
actually, Mr. Trotter doesn't have a bid. He was not a prime contractor.
Well, he was a sub. Right, he was a sub. But I know what the bid was because I was part of, okay. because I was part of the.
I think we're done with this item, though, because.
I'm sorry. I'm sorry, Governor. What?
We're done with this item. So thank you very much for coming in.
Well, all right. Well,
Any other questions?
The prime contractor did not.
There's no standing for them. They can't talk to somebody that didn't get a bid that wasn't a bidder. The prime contractor is not appealing the bid. Right? There's no issue here. Can't address it. Any other questions on the DBM agenda?
Move approval.
Second. 3-0 DBM. Move on to university system agenda.
Good morning. Joe Evans, representing the University System of Maryland. We have 5 items on the agenda. Here to answer any questions.
Any questions on the university system? Mr. Evans?
Yes.
Yeah, I want to see that.
I think we may have a question, Mr. Yeah. Evans.
Yeah, so item 3C, you get a big A++++ because you're awarding a design build contract.
Man, I wasn't expecting that one.
Construction company for construction of a new 900-bed residence hall and 1,200-seat dining facility. Cost of the proposed contract is $19,875,000. As I live and die. This is, please.
We do.
Gold star.
Design deal. Yeah.
Can
design
Mr. Evans deal. Get one of those comptroller points?
Yeah.
Something. Golden hammer. Something like that.
No, I'm very pleased to see that, and please keep me in the loop as far as how that project moves forward.
Yes, sir.
Thank you. Any other questions? Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Motion on university system.
Move approval.
Second, 3-0. We're going to move on to information technology.
Good morning, Mr. Governor, Madam Treasurer, and Mr. Comptroller. For the record, I'm Michael Leahy, Acting Secretary of the Department of Information Technology. Today, we have 10 items on the agenda. 2 are supplemental, and we're withdrawing item 5, IT. We do have agency representatives here to answer any questions you might have.
Thank you, sir. I know we have some speakers signed up for a couple of items, but before we get to those, I'd like to talk about item 2. This is a $1.9 million contract to provide statewide live streaming video services for state agencies to broadcast their public meetings and to provide transparency that Marylanders expect from state government. At the Board of Public Works here, we set a high bar for transparency. As we speak, this meeting is being live-streamed. It's also archived. Unfortunately, for the proceedings downstairs in the legislature, this is the standard. This is not a joke. This is actually only if you're in this building and you have one of these old wooden boxes like I have in my desk. Can you follow what's going on in the legislature? Secretary Leahy, would it be possible for the General Assembly to piggyback on this contract
yes,
in order
it would
to live stream their floor sessions?
Yes, it would, Governor.
Well, maybe we can talk to them about that. Last year,
Governor,
we provided the funding for it, and they moved
the
it somewhere else.
They're still in session. You don't need one of those boxes. Anywhere, anyone all over the country.
We're one of 43 states in America that do not live stream the proceedings on the floor of the House or the Senate. They do have some.
These are being live streamed. That's exactly what it is. It's not video.
We can all get audio.
To the words.
I'd like
to
see what's
words.
Going on.
But anywhere around the nation, people can call in, and then it's archived, and you can hear it over and over and over again.
There are only 7 states in America that don't have video live streaming, and we have a bill to try to fix that, and I just wanted to point that out, that we could easily do it. We provided the funding for it. We could put it on this contract. But
I'm not sure how many people want to sit there and watch 188 politicians.
I think most people in Maryland would like to see the transparency.
But just seriously, so people understand, it is live streamed. It's audio only.
Well,
it's absolutely true.
I was talking about video live streaming.
Oh, okay.
You know, that's totally different. We are in the you know, this, we've moved on. I mean, you can actually see things now. It's like television. But anyway, we have some speakers lined up for items 6 and 7. These are...
Could I just add a comment
sure.
on the live stream? I love the live streaming that's done by the Board of Public Works. It's a wonderful picture. It makes all of us look remarkably good. But the audio is horrible. Nobody can understand any of it. It's barely. Yeah, let's get one of these. So please, Madam Secretary, get a new contractor or tear up the old contract and join in with this group so that...
Just do an RFP.
You know.
You know,
maybe it's deliberate. Maybe nobody wants to hear what I have to say. But that's.
I think sometimes about halfway through they turn it down. Just
no, it's when the when it goes blank that I know that I'm not cooperating right. But seriously,
I've got a button underneath the desk.
Anyway, I would love to see an improvement in the audio.
Yeah. You know, I'm embarrassed to say that since I'm in every one of these meetings, I've never actually watched one. But I'll go back and check, see how you sound on
you
the video.
You look good, Governor.
Thank you. I lost where I was now. We have these items that want to come.
I think Secretary Forth had some good news on those items on IT.
Oh, good.
The ETA one before the contractors get up. I think it was just the contractors were here who were going to be recommended for award, and they were... excited and wanted to give you their name.
Okay.
So maybe Mr. Ports would like to tell you about the NBTA 2 contract.
Yeah, well, we're trying to make some service, customer service upgrades and safety upgrades on the EasyPass system.
That's the third generation.
And we've already provided $270 million in toll and relief, and we cut tolls at every facility in the state for the first time in 50 years. We also eliminated the monthly EasyPass fees. On the transponder, and do you want to talk before we bring up the other folks? Go ahead.
Well, I'll be very brief, and then you can bring some folks up, and then we'll see what if there's any concerns. But this is a perfect example, I believe, what the BPW has asked us to do, which is increase competition. What we did before. We would have a 10-year contract, and it'd be one contract, and they'd do all the services. To put aside the fact that the incumbent always gets the job again, which you can see we don't do all the time, we had to convince the entire world out there, the bidding, the contractors, that we were serious about competition. Because if they think the incumbent's going to win it, nobody competes because it costs a lot of money to do so. And so what we did is we split this into two different portions to increase competition. There are some companies that can do all of it, very few in the nation, that can do both. And then there are many companies that do one portion and many companies that can do the other portion. Now, when they bid, they could bid for one or the other or both. And so we were opening this up as wide as we could for competition, and we had a tremendous amount of competition bidding on these contracts on both parts. So we were excited that we got national recognition as far as competition goes, and so we're excited to bring these forward to you today.
We have signed up to speak on item 6, Maryland Transportation Authority electronic toll collection, Janet Eichers and Darby Swank. Maybe we don't.
Yeah. I think they were concerned that somebody else might be here. I think they're just here for questions.
Okay.
Contractors.
We have from Transcor, Phil Andrews and Tracy Marks.
Right. Remember that from Georgia's County Rule number 2 about... Ahead,
everybody that signed up today decided to take a hike.
We must be doing a good job.
Yeah. Any questions?
Yeah, let me just ask if I could
cut to the chase here and ask the question that sure. relates to actually Mr. Trotter being here and trying to get some traction when he was a subcontractor, sure. and that obvious that avenue of the Board of Contract Appeals not being available to him. But now we have a situation where one of the bidders, I believe, is protesting before the Board of Contract Appeals. I fully understand that both vendors recommended for the contract award are reputable, but since we're talking about the integrity of the procurement system, why would we prematurely cut off the appeals process? Obviously, there are savings. There are always savings from new contracts that may or may not appear. But by the way, we're going to talk about Motorola in a minute. Famous contract that continues to metastasize, I guess, and spread and increase. So why wouldn't we allow the appeals process to move forward here?
So, and, I'm sorry.
Can I just jump on that for a second?
Yeah.
The specific question is, what is the substantial state interest which forces us to ask now?
Okay. So there's a few things, and I'll kind of gloss over them, and then I'll have probably Kevin Rager come up and get more specific if you like. But, Mr. Comptroller, you mentioned earlier today about the added cost of the taxpayer.
Right.
And this is a perfect example of an incumbent not winning a contract. As a matter of fact, they did bid on both of them. They came in third on one and fifth on the other, fifth out of five. And and we deemed that their protest at this point is nothing more than them trying to wait out the system and basically get paid for months and months while it goes through the court process. And so the savings in that respect is about $800,000 to $900,000 per month that we would be saving the citizens of Maryland by moving on it today. Now, we don't believe they're going to win, and I've heard you mention this before, if I'm not mistaken, why don't we bring contracts forward in the face of protest when we know that if we don't, we're just rewarding bad behavior? And I know that those weren't your exact words, but why would we allow a process to go forward when we know that at the end of the day, all they're trying to do is look at, you know, lining their own pockets and for a few months, when we could, if we don't delay, we impact, if we do delay, we would impact all the customer service improvements that we're going to get, the safety, the environmental gains that we could get from CO, the savings in CO, the fuel economy gains, and congestion relief. And so all these things, all these advantages that we would gain by moving this forward today would have to wait, as well as we'd have to pay the current contractor $800,000 to $900,000 per month more for protests we believe we're absolutely going to win.
Okay, well, that's perfectly appropriate, I guess, but in your view, but I happen to disagree with it, because why would we need a Board of Contract Appeals? Let's send the whole group packing, because those arguments are very, very general, that any incumbent that loses a contract and protests that contract is somehow lining their pockets by dragging everybody's through a big delay. Let me ask a question about the I-495 and I-270 expansions over in the Washington area. It's my understanding that there will be tolls added on portions of those highways. I was wondering how does that affect the contracts that are before the board today? Are we going to anticipate substantial modifications to add funds or would those new tolling systems and related services be part of a separate competitive procurement process?
So I would have to answer that part, is we don't know what we don't know. That RFP hasn't been defined yet. It could be a separate tolling facility and operation, or it could be modified through working with the competitors from all over the world, all over the known universe. I'm sorry, Mr. Governor, all over the known universe to have it work with MDTA. So those decisions haven't been made yet because we're very, very much premature in that process.
Okay. And let me just ask about the transition from staff toll booths to exclusively video tolling, whereby no cash transactions will be conducted, monetary currency collection will be discontinued entirely. Obviously, this is going to have a transition period because there are a lot of people that, to my amazement, don't use EasyPass. And can you help me understand how the department's planning to publicize and educate the public about what is obviously a significant transition from where we are today?
Well, I'll answer part of it, and then I'll probably have Kevin come up and answer more fully. We're working with employees on a transition plan. So we've already started that process. And where employees transition out into other jobs, because we're trying to find them other jobs within the state, we use contractors in those positions until this new contract goes through. So we are working very closely with employees. We want to be as fair and equitable as we can for that. Two, very recently, I believe it's starting in September, MVA, Motor Vehicle Administration, has now put on their website that anytime you do a driver transaction, a vehicle transaction, a question will come up, do you want an easy pass? And we've sold, I believe, about 3,000 so far, over 3,000. So we're getting the word out that way. And, of course, we're going to have a much more robust public outreach as we move forward. But let me ask Kevin Ryder to come up and explain.
Doing away with the monthly fees to help people want to.
I'm sorry?
Doing away with the monthly fees to help people want to get them as well.
I tell you, when we did away with the monthly fees, as you may recall, Governor, when the previous administration implemented the monthly fees, about 90,000 people gave up their Easy Pass. As a matter of fact, I was one of those. And the reason I did it was not monetarily necessary, but out of principle, because I didn't feel like you should be charging me for something I may or may not use every month. And so when you decided to get rid of that monthly fee and save the citizens lots and lots of money, millions of dollars over the course of years, we had an influx of people purchasing those, plus, Mr. Comptroller, not my commercial, you get a 20% discount if you have an easy pass. And you get through a whole lot quicker than sitting in those lines waiting for cash. And so we're doing everything we can to encourage that, but you're right. The monthly fee reduction that you implemented a couple years ago has been an absolute success and is driving our numbers up like crazy for easy pass use. And Kevin?
If you hadn't gotten rid of that Easy Pass, you probably would be Secretary of Transportation.
I'm telling you, we got a great secretary right now.
And Mr. Comptroller, just to follow up on your inquiry relative to all electronic toll conversion, we fully anticipate that with any facility in Maryland that we would look to convert, that we would need between 9 and 12 months of aggressive public outreach, which would include in-person and online town hall meetings. We're having continued conversations, as Deputy Secretary Quartz mentioned, with all of our toll collector staff, because the conversion to all electronic tolling has been a part of MDTA's strategic vision since about 2004. But to the point that you made about EasyPass transponders and the need to increase the utilization with an evolution to all electronic tolling, that's precisely why we want to get started on this new contract, because the new contract gives us a vast supply of new methods to communicate with our customers to encourage EasyPass utilization, to make that transition much quicker, much more efficient, and much more effective for them. I know that the Deputy Secretary mentioned safety. To me, that is one of the key elements of this. National studies indicate a 77% reduction in vehicle accidents at toll plazas because of all electronic toll conversion. There's also an extraordinary environmental benefit. We estimate 21 to 90 tons of CO2 would not be emitted daily with AET conversion, 2,100 to 10,800 gallons of fuel not being burned, and 3,500 hours of traffic delay congestion being eliminated with all AET, which is precisely why we're here today to request your permission to move forward.
Okay, so just finally, what bad things, Mr. Deputy Secretary, or you, sir, would happen if we held up these two contracts? They total $360 million. I guess what I'm hearing as far as the protest goes forward, I guess what I'm hearing is that there's a dollar amount attached to the per month. How does that come up with? How do you come up with that?
The estimation is simply by calculating the amount that would be charged by the incumbent under in a protest period versus what MDTA would be paying under the new contract terms. And the difference is about $900,000 per month.
And that would go on for how many months, you estimate?
It's unknown. It would be until the Board of Contract Appeals issues a ruling and any further appeals were exhausted.
Well, I think from my standpoint, the integrity of the system mandates that you let the appeal move forward, because otherwise we're just going to be in a situation where the Board of Contract Appeals doesn't have any integrity.
Actually, Mr. Comptroller,
and I don't know whether disagree that with is you. Correct or not of 900,000. But
I don't like to disagree with you because we're good friends, right?
Sure.
But we allow many contracts to go to the Board of Contract Appeals, many. But quite frankly, there's also a part of the law that allows the Board of Public Works to award in the face of a protest. So someone in their wisdom allowed both to occur. It's not a mandate that it has to go to Board of Contract Appeals. That is the process if you want to allow it to go to the Board of Contract Appeals. But there's also a part of the process that allows an agency or department or the Board of Public Works to award in the face of,
and I hope they
of,
would do streaming live or whatever it is. I hope they do that of the Board of Contract Appeals, because I think it's the right thing to do. We're talking transparency and accountability. We're talking a very large contract over 13 years. I'm sure the companies are very reputable. I'm sure the process over there can be expedited and limited to some reasonable 3 or 4 months. And I understand there's a monetary difference, and I think it's worth paying that in order to get this right, particularly as far as what's going to happen with the toll contract in the Washington area.
Let me just say that this doesn't happen very often, Mr. Comptroller, but I'm going to disagree with you respectfully. Deferral of this will delay the transition into enhanced safety and customer service. It will require us to pay more money. Those are important considerations, all the things you talked about, the environment, the saving people waiting in line and traffic and doing this conversion. But more importantly, the thing that you and I have both focused on and talked about for 3 years is we want to have competitive bids. We want to get more people to bid on these contracts. We don't just want the incumbent contractor to get renewed. They were in fifth place on the bid out of five. And we are getting competition, and we are getting good qualified bidders. And I'm afraid if every time someone protested, which every single incumbent would do, then people aren't going to bid anymore, because they're like, I'm not going to wait, to go through this. I'm going to put a bid in at a certain number, and then it's going to take a year-long court case or a Board of Contract Appeals argument, and then I wouldn't bid if I was if you didn't think you were ever going to get a contract. So I'm ready to move forward on it, but I understand the comptroller's concern.
I just want to say it's a scurrilous rumor that I'm paying him $20 to disagree with me. But
we have a Democratic primary coming up in June. I just want to make sure that I argue with him a couple times before. Although I don't think he has any phones.
I guess, Madam
Treasurer. I have to say, this is an unusual position for all of us. But my question of the secretary, the deputy secretary.
Thanks.
What is the substantial harm? And as I understand it, the substantial harm is public safety. There will not be the reduction in harm that there could have been.
That is correct.
Public safety, cost, and the environment. And anyone has a right to appeal, but the company that is appealing is not the second place winner. They wouldn't be getting the contract.
If it was, we would probably go to the Board of Contract Appeals.
We
would.
I must say, actually, for the reasons the governor cited, I would agree with him.
She acted like surprised. That is a lot.
Who knew? So we're separating that item.
We'll separate that item out.
Okay. I have one other item.
Go for it.
Item 3.
Item 3?
Yes.
What is item 3?
That is a extension or modification of an existing contract with Motorola. And this is for the implementation of statewide public safety wireless communication system. My own field enforcement division uses this system. They're very complimentary of it. But I happen to think it's a bit of a boondoggle and a sweetheart arrangement with Motorola, much as I like Motorola and go back. I think it's a fine company, but this is a just completely out of control contract that started well before you, Governor. And if I could just ask a few questions about it. In 2010, 8 years ago, I raised the same concerns I'm raising now, that the state locked itself into an 8-year, $345 million contract with Motorola, despite appeals from the other bidder and concerns regarding MBE commitments at the time. I voted against the contract, and I continue to have the concerns I raised then, and I have more concerns today. It's my understanding that the construction of the system is 4 years behind schedule. According to the company, it's delays in state budget allocations. But correct me if I'm wrong, Mr. Secretary, part of the reason why the department's asking approval for this 4-year extension and additional 1-year renewal option is that you need additional funding to complete the construction of the system. I thought that was what we allocated with the original $345 million contract. So I'd like just a couple of clarifications on this to make sure that our taxpayers' credit card isn't being charged twice for the project that has received appropriations since 2010, and that the funds from the extension renewal option will instead be used for the operational aspects of this system. And while we're on the subject of the operational aspects, can you verify that each of the radios that we're going to buy, or supposedly the people who are going to use the system have to buy, are Motorola phones? Nobody else, no other radio fits. What's the cost? I believe it's $6,000 per radio. Cost that's borne both by the taxpayers of the state through the contract, but also separately by the local governments that joined the system, most of whom have, I think, been very resistant to date. So if we can agree on the cost of the system, which we're being asked to increase by $61 million, that's being asked, that's an enormous amount of money. And then how about this concern that I have about locking our first responders into an expensive technology that will be over a decade old by the time the system's implemented? The irony here is that this system's out of date once it starts. Who knows what is going to be available technologically as we, so as boondoggle written all over it, I have voted against it. I will continue to vote against it because It's just an open checkbook here.
Would you like me to
please
answer? Thank you, Mr. Comptroller.
Seems like you need to respond to that.
I think so. To begin, as you said, there has been some considerable confusion, and some of it on my part, about what has occurred in the past and what the expectations were of this contract. As you stated at the beginning, it is my understanding that there were budget constraints, that money was not put in the budget to complete the project in the original time allotted. And so to fulfill that, the issue before us is a question that is actually three questions. The first is, what is the actual cost of completing the construction and implementation that, as you say, is a bit behind schedule? The second question goes to, how does the completion of that system and the warranties associated with it interact with the actual costs of maintaining the operations and doing repairs and ongoing work for the parts of the system that are out of warranty? And then the third part is, given your concern, which I share, with attempting to sort of cut the Gordian knot and find the simplest answer as well as the correct answer, both economically and with regard to systems, the proposal that is before you takes into account the fact that it is a concern of mine and the folks that are working on this day to day, that to the extent there is still agreement that the system should be put in place throughout the state for public safety, my concern goes to the question that if, while it is accepted and under warranty, I have significant concerns about the difficulty one may face if part of the system is under warranty and part of it is operationally separate. In terms of what contractor is responsible for maintaining it. It's very much akin to the circumstance that I'm sure you've seen before, that if a roof is installed on a building and the roof fails, the contractor that put the roof on says, it's the materials. The materials are no good. That's why it failed. And the folks who manufactured it, put the materials together, said, no, it was installed improperly. And so what has been put before the board originally looked at an attempt to keep all of those questions separate and have the potential exist for the system being built, part of it being under warranty from Motorola, and then part of it being subject to maintenance and operation by a separate vendor. It's my opinion that what has been put forward to you today actually does lower the estimate of the cost of maintaining the system by about $41 million. And also takes into effect that the one-year option is an option when the entire system is up for maintenance, which I believe is one of the concerns you've always raised, that we want to make certain that the state gets the most value for the dollars spent. And although the past about this contract may well lead us to believe that there is other technology 10 years out that would be far superior, we take these contracts on based on the assumptions of what is a viable technology at the time. There have been upgrades to radios and other equipment during this contract because of technologies that have been improved. And the expectation of future technology, since we can't tell when a revolutionary change is going to occur, that there are none on the horizon that would give me cause to say that continuing with this path would foreclose utilizing technologies that are likely to be a better value for the state. So, in conclusion, what we're trying to propose here is a way to bring all of these together to make certain that the questions about responsibility are addressed and that the one option year, which we would only undertake if indeed We determined that there were reasons that a competitive situation either needed more time, and I don't see that given the amount of time we have left under this contract, would allow us to put the entire system under maintenance and get the efficiency costs dealt with in that way. So I hope that answers.
No, it was a very impressive presentation, but what about the $6,000 Motorola radios?
Well, as you've said, I am going to have to defer to the folks that are dealing with the actual technology that's implemented. I'd like to bring Mr. Farley of my staff up.
Thank you.
Good morning, Madam Treasurer, Governor, Comptroller. My name for the record is Norman Farley. I'm the Director of Statewide Interoperable Communications. And to address your concerns about the cost of the radios, yes, the Motorola radios are expensive. There are various models. I think there's a $3,000, $4,000, there's even an $8,000 model. So it depends on what you get. And that's list price before the reductions that we get on the contract due to a mass purchase. However, the system is built to what's called a P25 standard, so that manufacturers of other radios have built P25 radios. Theoretically, you're supposed to work on the system. We have done some tests, and we've had some successful results with that. But however, I do know there have been other radio systems around the country and some federal ones that I'm familiar with where they had major issues, and it cost them a lot of extra money because they had one vendor that purchased the back end of the system, and another vendor purchased what they call the walkie-talkies, the subscriber units, from a different vendor, even though it was the same standard. And for some reason, they weren't working very well, and the vendors were going like this, and it wound up costing the project more money in the end to correct on it. So this way, that's the contract that we've had. We've purchased most of the radios already. What needs to be completed in the project is the actual construction of Phase 4 and Phase 5, and then conducting the maintenance of the system.
Got it. So the total cost now with today's action would be $406 million for this project. I said your presentation was impressive, not impressive enough to get me to vote for it, but it was a good effort all around.
And if I can answer, the base cost of the project, the $345 to complete the project, that's not changing. That's going to come under that ceiling. The $41 million additional it's put in is actually to support the maintenance of the O&M of the project during that four-year period.
Yeah, so I would appreciate it if 3, 6, and 7, the other two we talked about on the related pass, could be, registered as.
Absolutely. Thank you very
much. Can I just make sure I understand where the savings are coming from? That's from the projected cost of out-year options, which you're reducing, and then folding a portion but not 100% of that into the base and maintenance?
Well, the presumption is that maintenance in the out years, the options, would be at a presumed cost of $20 million a year. What we are saying in this proposal is that the costs will be lower than that, and we've locked them in at the lower rate.
Right. The current contract has 7 one-year options at $20 million apiece. We would be for 140, and so instead of doing that 140, we're adding 41 million for the 4 years worth of maintenance, and there's 20 million for the option year. So a total of 61 million versus 140 million.
Yeah, but the issue, Madam Treasurer, if I could just claim the floor, locals are not going to use this. I know you have a couple on the shore, and God bless them.
We've got six counties right now, two more that are considering it. We've got 14,000 what we call primary users, both state and locals, and another 25,000 interoperable users right now. And the system's only about 60% completed.
Trust me, when they realize what they're, I assume most of them have cancellation provisions.
Well, Well, actually, the issue, I mean, the locals, it's even harder for them because if they go by themselves, they have to buy the radios and the back end and maintain it, and they get hit with even a higher bill than if they go with the state.
Thank you. Before we move on, I want to mention item 9 and commend, I don't know if he's here, but I want to commend Secretary Moyer, the Department of Public Safety and Correctional Services. Is he here? Oh, there's Secretary Moyer and also Pete Landon, who is our Director of Homeland Security. I want to thank them both for their work on this statewide master contract, which will eventually allow Maryland counties to make texting, be able to text to reach 911 and make it accessible to all residents in Maryland with a cell phone. I think it's terrific. Over 70% of 911 calls currently come from cell phones, and this contract will provide a valuable public safety tool also for Maryland's 1.2 million deaf and hard of hearing residents. And anyone in an emergency situation, such as a domestic violence incident, or someone that's not able to, where making a voice call would be dangerous or impossible. And this is an important component of Maryland's emergency number system towards a statewide effort to upgrade the state's existing system, which is antiquated 1960s era infrastructure. And our new program called Next Generation 911 is terrific, so I want to thank you. This is probably 1920s. you can flip to go to the Senate or the House, by the way. This did not cost $6,000. These are $6. Thank you for that. Any other questions on this agenda?
Could I just follow up on that, Governor? I want to thank and salute my... I'd like to salute Senator, State Senator Craig Zucker, a longtime friend of mine, for his leadership and advocacy, which led to the establishment of this program. And I'd particularly like to thank your administration, Governor, specifically the leadership at the Department of Public Safety and Correctional Services, for moving swiftly to implement what I agree with you is a very important program. This will especially benefit Marylanders with disabilities by giving them access to critical first responder services by using text messaging. I think it's a huge leap in the right direction, and we as a state should be very proud for adopting and implementing this terrific program.
Well, thank you, and thank you for giving the Senator a shout-out. I also want to thank Senator Cheryl Kagan from Montgomery County, who has a number of 911 bills that I discussed with her this morning at the Women's Caucus breakfast. So both number
and has been pushing for this. For
yeah, she was pushing me, so it was good. Yeah. She's loving it. But it's very good. So any other questions on this? Was a long information technology. You normally, you know, I guess do we want to separate out the motions?
On 3, 6, and 7.
Should we do one together on 3, 6, and 7, or do you want 3?
Well, I'm just happy to be noted in opposition to all 3 of us.
Okay.
Right.
So there's a motion for items 3, 6, and 7, which I'll make the motion, seconded by the treasurer and voted against by the comptroller.
Thank you.
Thank you. And now is there a motion on the remainder of the
move
agenda?
Approval.
Second.
3-0 on the remainder of the agenda. We're going to move on to Department of Transportation agenda. Although it seems like we already been talking.
Been a long day, Governor.
I'd like to recognize the long, long-standing Deputy Secretary in 2004.
Good morning, Madam Chairman, Mr. Comptroller, and Governor. For the record, my name is Jim Ports, and I am still Deputy Secretary of Maryland Department of Transportation. The Maryland Department of Transportation is presenting 13 items today. At this time, MDOT is withdrawing 11 GM options. And we're happy to answer any questions you might have.
I have no questions for my colleagues.
Move approval.
3-0. You got off easy.
Good job.
Now we're going to move on to Secretary Churchill, Department of General Services.
Well, good morning, Governor, Madam Treasurer, Mr. Comptroller. For the record, I'm Ellington Churchill, Secretary for the Department of General Services. The department has 29 items on our agenda, and we are withdrawing item 10LT. We have agency representation to answer any questions you may have.
Any questions on general services?
Could I just say, Mr. Secretary, again, I've noticed as we go through the entire agenda, not necessarily in DGS, these emergency procurements of overaged, I don't know what they are this year, today, boilers, infrastructure, which I truly believe cost us more because we don't catch things in time and therefore lose the efficiencies of a new generation, and secondly, spend all this money patching old stuff that doesn't work as well. I know they're not all in DGS, but they're throughout the agenda, and I look forward to the day when you can bring all those people together, or whoever, and get us a plan for doing preventive maintenance and then coming in and replacing things at the appropriate time, not just at the last minute when it's an emergency and costs more.
Well, I thank you for that.
I believe you agree.
And we are working on that. We are actively working with other departments to really understand our facilities' needs. And I can, of course, confirm with the Department of General Services, we have a robust inspection and maintenance plan. Sometimes that doesn't catch all the items. And
it can't
so,
be 100%.
Yeah.
Correct.
But we are working on that.
Well, I really do think it saves the employees. It saves the taxpayers.
Absolutely. Same thing we need to do in our school systems as well.
Exactly the same thing.
Any other questions on DGS?
Move approval.
Second. 3-0. Thank you very much. This concludes the Board of Public Works.
Well, I always count.